day today on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast, you said the word day a lot, might be one of our final grade the trade days of the 2017 season as the deadlines are approaching. We welcome you to the show. This is the Wednesday show. It's hump day, and we're going to get you over the hump with, get ready for this, a Michael Jackson-themed fantasy baseball podcast. Who's pumped?
Sure.
Right? Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's do it. We have three segments that are Michael Jackson-themed. I won't tell you all of them now, but one of them is Beat It, and that would be about players we might be willing to drop right now. So that
obviously
makes sense. Right. Makes sense. And Buffalo Wild Wings makes sense. Sports trades are scary. One person can be replaced by another, exchanged for money. You're given away for a hypothetical future person. And once they leave your team, you can't like them anymore, even if you have their jersey, which you can't wear anymore. Except at B-dubs, they won't judge, but others might. Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports. Oh, good morning, guys. Fill in the blank for me, if you would. Evan Longoria is the number blank third baseman in points leagues and number blank in Roto, Evan Longoria.
I will go with number 13 in points leagues and 14 in Roto.
I believe he is 7th in points, and I will say 8th in Roto.
Okay, I think Chris cheated. He is 7th in points. That is
I was
true.
Looking it up this morning.
he's 11th in Roto.
Okay.
But, man, what?
Yeah.
I mean, Evan Longoria, he hit for the cycle yesterday. He hasn't had that good of a year. What right
he's
does he have to be 7th in points?
He's like a point and a half ahead of Mike Moustakas, I think.
Really?
And I don't think anybody, like, Mike Moustakas is having a good year, but I don't think we've ever had him in our top 12. And I think that's probably the same for Evan Longoria.
Well, Moustakas is a lot better in Roto. Moustakas is the number 32, number 32 overall player in Roto, and Longoria is 64th.
So
yeah,
what is Longoria getting in points leagues?
Doubles.
Because
doubles.
It's not like he's a great plate discipline guy. He's pretty average as far as that goes.
He's 11 more doubles than Moustakas. And Moustakas has 17 walks this year.
How many more home runs does Moustakas have than...
Probably 10.
13.
Yeah.
13.
He has 13 more home runs than Longoria?
30 to 17. He's at 30, Moustakas.
He's at 30 already?
Yeah, he's one of the leaders. He's going to set the Royals record.
I knew he was one of the leaders, but already to 30. Wow, that... Man. Yeah, I'd rather have Moustakas. I mean, there's nothing like... Evan Longoria is one of those hitters who, if you're starting him, it's not a real problem, but he's not the one setting you apart. I'm sure the fact that he's hitting .355 over his last 24 games has something to do with where he ranks among third basemen. He's just one of the hotter ones right now, so among that cluster, he's moved toward the front.
It's
Longoria, been a weird season at third base.
Yeah, it hasn't been a great year. Is Longoria a jag? Just the guy?
He's maybe a little bit above that, but I think that's probably... like he ranks higher in Roto at third base than Freddie Freeman, Manny Machado, Justin Turner. I don't think there's any question. He's ranked higher than Matt Carpenter, but I don't think there's any question. You'd rather have all of those guys ahead of him. And there are just various reasons. Manny Machado's been a little bit unlucky. Justin Turner missed some time. Matt Carpenter has been up and down. But, like, you'd definitely rather have those guys than Evan Longoria.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I probably could have done a it ain't too much for me to jag segment for Michael Jackson, but I didn't do that. Regrets. So listen, Ozzie Albies is up. Lucas Sims is up. Keon Broxton's up. Bad news for Lewis Brinson. Byron Buxton's back. We'll talk about all that stuff. We'll talk about Aaron Judge and Cody Bellinger, the Rookie of the Year candidates and what they've been doing lately. Bellinger with a good game yesterday. A lot to get to today, and your emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, and we'll get to today's matchups also at the end of the show. Grade the Trade will be at the end of the show. Let's go to the call-ups, and Ozzie Albies, second baseman for Atlanta, he started at second base yesterday. Albies is 30% owned. He played second base, went 0-for-2 with a walk and a run. Is Ozzie, and they also called up Lucas Sims, who started and threw six innings of three-run ball with three strikeouts against the Dodgers. Is Ozzie Albies going to give you anything other than steals this year, guys?
Dun it.
Steals.
Yeah, that would be what I would expect from him. He kind of has a bit of a Francisco Lindor profile in the minors. His numbers are just okay. 9 home runs this season, 8 triples, 21 steals. Hit 285, but not the best strikeout rate for a guy who doesn't have a lot of power. But he's not even 21 yet. He won't be 21 until next January.
He's the youngest player in baseball. He's the first ever major leaguer born in 1997. So,
God.
The power numbers haven't been very good for the minors. I don't know that he doesn't profile as a power hitter.
But
I think in today's environment, when you have the kind of hitting skills that Ozzie Albies has, always been a very good contact hitter. You know, this isn't like a Jorge Mateo prospect we were talking about yesterday, where he's just strictly a burner. This is a guy who's hit for an average throughout a high average throughout his minor league career, and over his last 45 games in the minors, or 46 games rather, he had 9 doubles, 5 triples, 7 homers, slugged 508 with like a 203 ISO. So considering his youth and the base hitting talent he has entering what's now an extremely hitter friendly environment, more so than AAA, like, I don't know that he'll be just steals. That's all I would really count on from him. But, you know, if he gets off to a really good start here, I think he's going to be must add everywhere.
Is Ozzie Albies going to give you, we got about 58, 60 games, I don't know, something like that left. Will you get 15 steals from Albies?
That's probably on the high side.
Yeah, I'd take the under.
Okay. All right, and do you care about Lucas Sims? Starting pitcher for the Braves, again, 6 innings, 3 runs, 3 strikeouts against the Dodgers in his major league debut last night, 12% owned.
I mean, he's not the talent Albies is, but he did have a very high strikeout rate at AAA, was a former first-round pick who had some serious control issues last year and corrected those this year, did allow a lot of home runs at AAA, and I think allowed the one in his major league debut. Obviously, quality start in major league debut is a good thing, but he'll need to maintain that high strikeout rate from AAA with some of the vulnerability he has to home runs to really factor in fantasy. So I'm not rushing out to add him, but he's definitely on the radar.
Lucas Sims. Here are some other call-ups. Tell me if you care about them. Detroit recalled first baseman John Hicks, who homered yesterday. John Hicks.
I do not care, except in AL-only leagues.
Cincinnati.
Really deep
Cincinnati recalled Jesse Winker with Scott Schebler on the DL with a shoulder strain, and he homered and was robbed, actually, of a second homer yesterday. Jesse Winker.
Which is fun because he had 2 home runs at AAA this year. And he nearly, I get the sense with Jesse Winker, because I think he maybe had a 15 homer season in the minors once, but he's one of those prospects who, great plate discipline, great hitting skills. They keep saying, oh, the power is eventually going to develop. And if anything, it's gotten worse over the last couple of years. I have a feeling he's going to be one of those players, though, who doesn't show his best as a power hitter until reaching the majors. And the fact he has 5 walks to 2 strikeouts already as a major leaguer, I think no hurry to add him, but definitely somebody to keep an eye on.
Yeah, he has 7 home runs over his last 195 games in the minors. In 2015, he had 13 homers. In 2014, he had 15 in 74 games. Yeah, I mean, is there an explanation for why the power just disappeared like that?
I looked into it when I was, you know, doing some of the preseason prospect stuff, because Winker's been on the prospect, you know, been in the prospect discussion for a while now, and it was weird, the big drop in home runs. I couldn't. There was a wrist injury, I think, that wasn't directly attributed to the problem, to the drop in home runs. The fact that it continued into this year, though, makes me think it probably wasn't directly related. I honestly don't know, but I mean, his home runs yesterday, or the actual home run was to center field. The near home run was opposite way. It's pretty clear there's power here. I don't know why he wasn't hitting home runs in the minors, but I do expect him to hit more in the majors. Maybe not be like a 20 homer guy, but double digits with good plate discipline.
Yeah, we don't know what's going to happen.
Could be a Christian Yelich type.
We don't know what's going to happen when Scott Schebler comes back, but Jesse Winker, would you drop Lewis Brinson for him right now?
I don't think so.
I might, just because is Lewis Brinson going to play? They called Keon Broxton back up.
Right, yeah.
I don't know, but you know, Winker has playing time questions too, so I think Lewis is the more talented player. Winker has to do more than hit one home run for me to prioritize him over Brinson.
First name basis there, Scott.
Oh, he's a local boy. You know, yeah, Lewis Brinson's Fort Lauderdale
Lewis,
kid.
I
Scott
like
might
it.
Have run into him at the grocery store.
I like it. All right, Ahmed Rosario batted seventh at Colorado. Jose Reyes sat. We actually didn't talk about that angle, but if you care, I mean, they didn't trade Cabrera or Walker or Reyes, so they've got a little bit of a surplus. Reyes sat
Walker,
yesterday.
Walker's going to play second and first. I would assume Reyes, is he just going to play third?
Third and second. Occasionally second, they said.
Yeah, so I would guess Rosario's probably the only everyday player in that group. Although, of course, I'm blanking on the Mets manager's name.
Terry Collins.
Terry Collins.
You'll have to learn a new name soon.
As is his trend. I'm struggling right now.
What's going on,
words.
Chris?
I don't know. I'm struggling with my... I woke up extra early today, so maybe that's it. I don't know. But either way, he started giving us some Michael Conforto hints yesterday that Ahmed Rosario will get some time off as he adjusts to the major league schedule. So, sounds like they're giving a little bit of runway potentially for the 2 days off randomly every week that they... that Terry Collins seems to give every young player.
Alrighty.
I would still say Rosario is the most exciting of all these call-ups,
yes.
though, right? I mean, we talked about him a good bit yesterday.
Yes.
But he's the one you want. He's the only one I would say is really, for sure, mixed league relevant.
Out of Albies, Sims, Winker, John Hicks, Rosario. Byron Buxton's back. He's 32% owned. All he's going to do is steal, but he has 17 steals now. And as we mentioned, Milwaukee recalled Keon Broxton and Lewis Brinson did sit yesterday. All right, getting into the Tuesday stuff. Tuesday standouts. And you know, I don't know if anybody saw the Red Sox-Indians game. I only caught the ninth inning. Whoa. That was a thriller.
That was a really fun game.
Yeah, thriller, you know.
Okay, can we just home run or not?
No. If you fall into the bullpen, if you fall into home run territory, that should be a home run. So actually, yes, that should be a home run. That's actually in the notes, Chris. I'm glad you brought that up. I don't get how that's a catch. Austin Jackson.
It's a strange rule.
He goes flying into the bullpen, you know, makes an amazing catch, goes over the bullpen wall, which is pretty low. I'll give him that. But you end up in home run territory. Like, that's a home run. I don't get it.
Yeah.
So forgive me because I didn't actually see the play, but he actually cleared the fence and then caught it on the other side of the fence. It wasn't leaping and reaching over the fence.
Caught it reaching over the fence, landed with like his legs on the fence, flipped over.
Oh, well, how's that different from robbing any other home run?
Because he landed in the bullpen.
He ends up in the bullpen. I mean, the ball is in the bullpen, and the bullpen
fence.
Is home
I
run.
Mean, I'm sure plenty of other catches where you're leaping at the fence would send you over the wall if the wall was lower.
Right, but you know what? A lot of fly balls would hit the wall, but at Fenway Park, the wall is low. They go into the bullpen. It's a home run.
He caught it before it landed on the other side of the fence.
I don't actually have an opinion on this.
I mean, you catch a ball at the 1 yard line and then you get hit and you fall into the end zone. It's a touchdown. You catch a ball at the wall, you fall into the bullpen. It should be a home run. Where did the ball end up?
That is apples to oranges, totally.
Yeah, I guess. And now I'm hungry. Aaron Judge and Cody Bellinger. Let's take a look at Judge first. 0 for 4 with a strikeout, a deep funk. The quote after the game yesterday from Aaron Judge, quote, Chris Towers was wrong. The home run derby screwed me up. I regret ever participating, end quote. I don't know how he knew about you, Chris.
Really interesting.
No, he hadn't said anything about the Derby. But since the All-Star break, Judge is batting 159 with 4 home runs. In 18 games, he does have 15 walks but 27 strikeouts. That is a pretty similar strikeout rate to what we saw last year when he batted 179 in 27 games with 42 strikeouts. He's batting 159 since the All-Star break in 18 games with a very similar K rate. The big difference is 9 walks in 27 games last year, 15 walks in 18 games since the All-Star break, not to mention an amazing first half. How concerned are you right now about Aaron Judge?
Well, I posted on Twitter yesterday just saying that, you know, he hit 235 with like an 840 OPS in the month of July. And there's at least a chance that that's who he is. Like, I'm not saying that is who he is, but we have to consider the possibility that within the wide range of outcomes that come with, you know, a 6'8" player who strikes out 30%+ of the time, that he might be a 240 hitter.
But I don't think it's any fairer to say, you know, the low month for Judge is actual Judge versus the high month.
I didn't say that.
Okay.
I mean, like,
that seemed to be what you were suggesting.
No,
I said we have to take into account the possibility that it's
What were you taking into account? The possibility that he could be his best month.
Like, right.
He hit That's
what I'm saying is that there's a wide range of outcomes, and we're seeing the low end now.
I think Aaron Judge is basically Giancarlo Stanton.
Sure. And Giancarlo Stanton's like a 900 OPS bat.
Yeah.
All right. And Cody Bellinger. Scott, did you trade Cody Bellinger? I know you traded him on June 25th. He hit 2 home runs that day. Did you trade him after the home runs or before?
I traded him before the home runs.
All right. Since that 2-homer game, Cody Bellinger, this is 28 games since Scott traded him. I guess like the day after Scott traded him. 247 with 4 home runs, 788 OPS, number 30 outfielder in points leagues, number 31 in Roto in the last 28 games. Hit a home run last night, though. So I thought that was interesting. You did a good job. You got Francisco Lindor, right, in a points
league? Yeah, how was Francisco Lindor done during that stretch? Well, what was the date, that the starting point?
June 25th.
June 25th.
Although I think I think it's June 26th.
But I think the point to take away from both Judge and Bellinger is okay, Judge is hitting 159 since the All-Star break. Obviously, that's not ideal. But even if Judge hits 240, he's still a very useful player. And I think that's the same thing with Cody Bellinger. I've got Cody Bellinger in one league where I'm using him as an outfielder in a Roto league, and I haven't really – there's been no point where I've thought about sitting him.
Same. But, man, I really hope Aaron Judge is not a 240 hitter. Like, that would suck.
I don't think he is. I think it's more like 260, 270.
He's going to strike out like 32% of the time. It's going to be really hard for him to hit much better than like 260.
Yeah. No, well.
Like, he needs to
he hits the ball.
Right, but he needs to be like a 350 BABIP guy to hit 270.
I think he can be. I think he probably is.
His BABIP might be a little low because so many of his hits are home runs. Right?
No, his BABIP's still like 380.
No. I mean, going forward.
Yeah.
A guy who hits a lot of home runs wouldn't have a great BABIP because those don't count. Correct?
Well, but I think, you know, both of these guys are, they strike out a ton. Most of their value is home runs, which, I mean, if home runs are going to be one of the more variable stats over the course of the season. Like, you're not going to have a steady.
You'll hit 5 in 1 week and go 3 weeks without one.
So, I mean, this just comes with the territory. That's why it was easy to say sell high for both of these players, because, you know, when they're homering at a rate that would put them on an 80 homer pace, like, duh, they're not going to sustain that. And usually this is how it corrects with a drastic. It's drastic and really frustrating. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with either. I think both Judge and Bellinger are still high end must start fantasy players. You have to accept the downslope along with the good moments.
They're both really good players. They're not as good as. The thing is, they both had maybe their best runs right at the beginning of their careers, or in Aaron Judge's case, the real beginning of his career. We don't count last year, although we probably should.
We don't.
And so when that happens, we haven't seen the worst of them. And so it skews your perceptions, because maybe the best of them could be the baseline, but it's probably not.
No. Okay. I get you.
So during that same stretch, Lindor has hit 318 with 3 homers, 4 steals, and an 833 OPS.
That's been a little better. That's yeah. pretty good. Okay, and I'm sure much better plate discipline. Also, another standout from yesterday was Kenta Maeda, and Scott talked about how the Darvish trade might make Maeda a loser. He openly admitted the trade got his attention, lit a fire under him a little bit, and he had one of his best starts of the year. Maeda did not give up a run, 2 hits in 7 innings, only threw 94 pitches.
That's the annoying thing.
Yeah,
is
well.
That, like, okay, he got through 7 innings on 94 pitches. He's not going to do that regularly. So right. if he's still only throwing 94 pitches.
It was basically the same number of pitches he had been yeah. throwing in those 5-inning starts.
Yeah, right.
And so that's the thing is, like, typically a pitcher who throws a really, really good start like this, you'll leave him in for 105, 110 pitches, and he can get through the eighth, maybe pitch a complete game. If this is, like, the absolute best we're going to get from Kenta Maeda, 7 innings, I think he's worth owning. I think he's a very good pitcher. But I think there's real concerns about his ability to handle a full workload.
Man, this sounds so much like my Kenta Maeda take before the season, doesn't it?
Yes, it
Chris
does.
Chris is seeing the light.
Yeah, but you were just like last week said you thought they were going to start turning Maeda loose and letting him pitch deeper into games.
Yeah.
And that's my thing.
That was my hope.
Before the season, my hope was that a year in the majors, a year pitching in a 5-man rotation would get him used to the workloads. And instead, he's pitched in a 5-man rotation like 3 times all year.
Yeah. Let me try and sum it up this way, because there's what I think should happen and what I want to happen versus what's actually going to happen. And that's Kenta Maeda, those two different positions couldn't be more opposite. Like, I feel like Kenta Maeda is one of, even when Clayton Kershaw is healthy, Kenta Maeda is one of the Dodgers' 4 best pitchers, forget 5. But I don't know that they're going to see that way. When McCarthy comes back, Kershaw comes back, they're still going to have Hyunjin Ryu around. And the fact that they've already bumped Maeda to the bullpen, that they're so careful with his innings, I'm still skeptical he's going to be the one who stays in the rotation. So I think he should, but I question whether he will even after this start.
He's also skeptical, so I don't blame you. Now, you shouldn't be skeptical, guys, about Harry's Razors. I've got a URL for every guy out there to remember. It's not hard. Harry's.com/FBT. HARRYS.com/FBT. A great shave at a great price. And with the URL, basically a great shave for free. I'm telling you, I use my Harry's razor when I shave. It's a high quality blade, a close, comfortable shave. And Harry's is so confident that you're going to love their blades, they'll give you their trial shave set for free when you sign up at harrys.com/FBT. All you have to pay for is shipping. Just a few bucks for shipping. What are you getting with that? That's a $13 value. It includes a weighted ergonomic razor handle, 5 precision-engineered blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, a travel blade cover. This is a no-brainer. Harrys.com/FBT. I bought 3 of these kits for Father's Day. I really did, because I wanted other people to understand why I use Harry's razors. It's a great gift for yourself or for someone else. So again, get your free trial set. Go to harrys.com/FBT right now. That's harrys.com/FBT. Ready for some hey real quick?
Sure. Yes.
Okay, let's do it real quick. Hey, real quick. I asked this one a few months ago, and we said Votto. Anthony Rizzo or Joey Votto?
I think we're unanimous in Votto.
Mm-hmm.
When we did our first 2-round mock draft for next season, I think Votto went 9th or 10th, and Rizzo went in like the 14-15 range.
All right. Now, Chris, Anthony Rizzo's OPS is 916. It's been right around there 4 straight years, including this year. But over the last 67 games, it's 991. So this is kind of what I was talking about when I thought he was going to have a big hot streak to make up for being kind of bad for like 5 weeks.
So now you think he's going to have like a 915 OPS the rest of the way? Like, now that he's gotten that hot streak out, we can just pencil him in for 915 the rest of the way?
Maybe that's what you would say. Sure. You always say that
just like one hit, one walk,
but isn't
a home run every 2 games.
Isn't that what you would say? That he's just going to be himself now? Because he always is.
No.
What would you say? What would you expect?
I would say I expect him to perform to his talent level, but that doesn't mean there won't be ebbs and flows. You were saying that because there was an ebb, there just has to be flow.
Yeah, that's how I felt about Anthony Rizzo. I don't feel that way about every hitter, but a guy like Rizzo, I did feel that way.
Yeah, Anthony Rizzo is really good.
Yeah, but can't we just expect that from every really good hitter, that when they have their ebb, they're going to flow?
I think it often works out that way.
There's a lot of...
I mean, we were kind of just saying the opposites happened for Aaron Judge and Cody Bellinger.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm not saying that it had to happen.
Oh, I am.
I don't know. I just... and maybe this isn't the most mathematically sound way of viewing it, but just based on observation, it's kind of amazing how players' numbers over the course of 162 games just kind of end up where they belong.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of times that's if they have a 2-month stretch where they start drastically on the wrong side of that, then a lot of times it's a 2-month stretch that makes up for it.
Can I ask you, all right. So what do you expect for Anthony Rendon the rest of the way? He's got a 1,005 OPS. He's got like a 1,200 OPS since the end of April, something like that. But this is a guy who's been like a high 700s, low 800s kind of OPS guy for his career. So do you think he's going to be a 1,000 OPS guy moving forward because his talent level has improved? Do you think he's going to be an 800 OPS guy because that's where his talent level has been before?
Yeah, I mean, his walk
rate... Or do you think he's going to be like a 500 OPS guy to balance that out?
I think this is a legitimate breakthrough for Rendon because all the peripherals support what he's doing. Walk rate up, strikeout rate down, BABIP normal.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Anthony Rendon is just, if not a 1,000 OPS guy, close to it. And it's a different situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Rendon wouldn't...
Talking about Rizzo and Bellinger.
Right. Rendon wouldn't have applied to my Rizzo argument from a couple months ago because he's been
an
enigma.
Or Justin Smoke or Josh Donaldson the other way.
Well, Donaldson, yeah. And I think the argument for you, Chris, to say you're wrong, Adam, would be Manny Machado. We've been waiting and waiting and waiting. Is he coming around? Maybe a little bit. But, you know, he's gotten
but my,
hot.
But my
but
thing
not
is I'm not expecting Manny Machado to be Uberman Manny Machado.
And
you know,
I kind of am.
Manny Machado to be Manny Machado.
I kind of am expecting Manny Machado to be Uberman Manny Machado, but I've been expecting
that
for a while.
Then you should trade whatever it costs to get him.
I did. You know,
like,
I did.
What did you trade?
It was a fairly even trade. It was...
Right, but that's the thing, is that using your logic, putting your logic into action, if we're going to give actionable advice to people who are listening, you should say, don't make a fair trade for Manny Machado. Overpay because he has to be better than Manny Machado in order to get his numbers to where, like, that's
I
what you're
taking
saying.
It too literally.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the argument that they're making.
No, I don't think so.
It's the level of assurance you have with this expectation. I mean, you can have a fleeting expectation of something that you don't necessarily want to act on to the degree you're talking about, but at the same time, it wouldn't surprise you if it happens. Like, the fairest way to approach Manny. Like, I see Manny Machado. I know he's better than this. I think he's going to be better. What exactly that looks like, I'm not willing to get into the specifics of that. I just think he's going to be better, and at worst, and my worst expectation of what better Manny Machado looks like is last year's Manny Machado. If it's even better than that, though, I wouldn't be terribly surprised.
So, Chris, I mean, I don't think
so you're
that's,
saying you're,
hold on. I don't think what you just said about overpaying for Machado because I thought Machado was going to be awesome, actually, that's like a terrible way to play fantasy. What we were
right,
telling
I
people
agree,
was to
but that's,
buy
but that's
low
the argument
on
that you're making.
No. The
but
argument
the argument,
is
no,
buy
the,
low
the
on Machado
is because no, you're saying there's a cause and effect here. You're saying because Manny Machado has not played like Manny Machado, he needs to play like a better version of Manny Machado to get to Manny Machado.
No.
That is the argument that you're making.
I don't.
First of all, you should expect that. Moreover,
first of all, I'm confused. Secondly. If you want to talk about it just from fantasy perspective, you know, from a trade perspective, you buy low on Machado because you don't give up that. You don't overpay for a guy who's been slumping. You buy low on him because you expect him to bounce back. But hold on. I think when I made the trade, and I still feel this way, I expected Manny Machado to go on a tear. I've been wrong. It hasn't really happened. It might be happening now. He's starting to come around. I'd like to see some more home runs. But yeah, I expect him to go on a tear because I can't imagine a season where Manny Machado doesn't have an extended
hot streak.
But
that happens all the time.
I know, exactly, and it hasn't happened yet. So I'm thinking it will happen.
Guys have disappointing full season lines all the time.
Oh, but I don't think Machado's going to be that guy. I'm going to bet on
him. Oh, he definitely is. There's no way he has a non-disappointing end of season line this year.
Okay, that's fine, but I still think from here on out he's going to perform very well.
Be Manny Machado.
Yeah, or probably better than Manny Machado. I think he's going to go on his hot streak where he has like an 1,100 OPS over 20 days, something like that.
I would say there's just as good a chance of that as the opposite.
Yeah, I just feel like, you know, you look at a normal Manny Machado season, I would guess that there are, you know, at least two really hot stretches, and I'm
right,
waiting
but
for
that's,
that.
That's, but those stretches, but your argument is that those stretches happen because a cold stretch happened before.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, they happen because they haven't happened yet. You know, you
so then you shouldn't buy low on Manny Machado because there's a chance you might not pay enough to get him. If you think that the cold streak begets a hot streak, then you should pay whatever the price you need.
But you don't have
to go
get
Manny Machado,
like,
or else
thing.
You're not giving actionable advice.
No, you don't have to. My actionable advice is I think Manny Machado is going to have a great stretch. His owner might not. So buy low and rip off the owner that has Machado. That's my advice. You don't always pay market value. I mean, that's not like a good way to play fantasy. You buy low and you sell high. Like, that's just evaluating a stock or a player. I don't really get where you're coming from.
I'm trying to take your argument to its logical conclusion.
My logical conclusion is buy low, buy low.
If you believe that a cold streak leads to a hot streak.
No, that's not the way to put it. A cold streak does not lead to a hot streak. A hot streak will happen because it hasn't happened yet, and he's one of the best hitters in baseball. That is the argument. You know, twisting it to say a cold streak leads to a hot streak is not what I'm saying. That is not accurate.
Okay.
Do you buy the age-old idea that, you know, everything evens out? I mean, because that's all Adam and I are arguing.
I think in the long run it does.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that just because he hasn't been hot yet means he will be hot moving forward. There are entire seasons that guys have throughout their careers where that just doesn't happen.
Right. It may not happen. Yeah.
And so I'm saying that
you
should expect Manny
Machado. Would you be surprised if it did happen?
I'm saying you should expect Manny Machado to be Manny Machado. You should expect Anthony Rizzo to be Anthony Rizzo. Absent new information like Anthony Rizzo, like you said, there is information that leads us to believe that Anthony Rizzo is a different player. There's information that leads us to believe that Josh Donaldson isn't the same guy he's been. So you shouldn't necessarily expect Josh Donaldson to be that guy. I'm saying you should trade for acquire players based on the talent level you think they have.
Yeah, exactly. That's
moving forward.
That's what I feel about Machado. I don't think the talent level for Machado has gone down at all. So if I were acquiring,
I don't either. So I expect Manny Machado moving forward. Yeah. You expect better Manny Machado.
I expect better Manny Machado. Yeah, I do, because okay. I think that's how it works with studs. Like, you catch them, that's why you buy low. Because if worst case scenario, I get what you think. Worst case scenario is he underperforms. But maybe Chris's most likely scenario, I trade for Manny Machado now, I get normal Manny Machado. I'm fine with that. But
right,
I
think you should trade for the most likely scenario.
But I don't know that that's the most likely. Like, I think players go in ebbs and flows, Chris, and he's going to flow.
I think we're getting stuck on this word expect, because I don't know that my expectations
you
are ever
expect
that
one,
specific
You
for
shouldn't
anybody.
Expect one thing. You should expect a range. Right. That's exactly. But the high end of the range and the low end of the range are both in there. It's not like Manny Machado, because he's hit the low end of his range so far, that doesn't mean he can't hit the low end of his range at some point.
Yeah,
moving forward.
Like, I don't know anything for a fact, Chris, but I personally am going to bet on Manny Machado, and I think that the high end of the range is coming.
I know for a fact you're a fool.
Hey, real quick, Logan Morrison or Eric Thames?
Ugh. Lomo. I think.
I think.
I feel not very excited about either of these fellas at this point.
Yeah, so what's the answer, guy?
I think Eric Thames is a more talented player.
All right. And from Brian, real quick, Berríos or Castillo rest of season?
Berríos.
Yeah, yeah, Barrios.
Okay, we got a concerning stat about Jose Barrios. We'll get to that in a second.
I'm sure we do.
Yeah, we got some big news for you. Luckily, it doesn't seem too serious for Max Scherzer, but we'll talk about that. Buffalo Wild Wings, look, whoever invented summer was obviously a sports fan. They didn't even try to hide it. They gave it playoff hockey, playoff basketball, the opening of both soccer and baseball. It's a clear display of favoritism, and the other seasons didn't stand a chance. With 3 months of clutch playoff drama and the awakening of new seasons, it's clearly the work of a sports fan. They might as well have called it sports season. And at Buffalo Wild Wings, they do call it sports season. Don't ever call it summer. That's not what it is. It's sports season. They're just waiting on the legal change. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings. Beer. Sports. Max Scherzer left with neck spasms. So, you know, you see him saying, I can't go in the middle of a game. You get worried. I think we can be comforted. It's not an arm injury. Yeah. Hooray.
He hit a dong.
He did.
That takes a lot out of you.
He was gazing at it, hurt his neck.
Yeah, imagine if he was in the home run derby.
Forget it. Johnny Cueto has a mild flexor strain, no timetable.
That's a concern.
You might not get Cueto this year.
Yep.
Yu Darvish is going to start at the Mets on Friday. Sonny Gray is going to start at Cleveland on Thursday. Jordan Montgomery is going to stick in the rotation for one more start. They're going six man just temporarily. Quite possible this will be the last start for Montgomery.
Make it count, Jordan. They should leave him in to throw 156 pitches.
There you go.
Like Mel Clark and Angels in the outfield.
Dustin Pedroia on the DL. Boston GM Dave Dombrowski said they're going to have to monitor Pedroia's knee for the rest of his career. Jonathan Lucroy sat with a stomach illness. Billy Hamilton left with an ankle injury. Paul Molitor did not name a closer. Somebody just tweeted me, Glenn Perkins? I haven't heard a thing about him.
I think he's coming. I think he might be a few weeks away. He might be on his rehab assignment or about to go out. But I mean,
not
yeah,
tomorrow.
He's on his rehab assignment right now. So I don't know. We've heard that a lot over the last 2 years.
Austin Jackson's catch should be a home run. That's my last big news item. And some milestones yesterday. Max Scherzer and John Lester hit their first career homers, and Gerard Dyson stole his 200th base. And this is from the AP. Dyson now has a successful steal rate of 85.1%, second in baseball history behind Carlos Beltran for players with a minimum of 225 attempts.
Future cool. Hall of Famer Carlos Beltran.
Yeah, and Gerard Dyson, probably.
Hopefully.
Trade deadlines are coming up. If they haven't gotten here already, guys, do you have any final moves that you would recommend? Buys, sells for the trade deadline?
I would still trade for Miguel Cabrera, and I'm trying to move Steven Matz. He had a good start last night. Hopefully I can turn him into something.
He did?
Yeah.
I don't know. It was better than you'd expect for Coors Field, but it was 5 innings, 2 strikeouts. I don't know.
I thought he went 6 innings.
Yeah, 5 innings, 3 runs, 2 strikeouts. Yeah. At Colorado.
Yeah, Steven Matz is...
I think he's
probably droppable already.
Pretty close to, yeah. I think he's pretty close to replacement level.
Beat it! Yeah.
I think, you know, it might be a good idea to make a play for, like, Chase Anderson, who was looking like a legit number two before getting hurt and should be coming back within the next couple weeks. I just feel like it's been long enough without him, and it was such a short time where we thought of him as anything worthwhile in fantasy that you may be able to get him for...
He might not even be owned that highly.
Well, let's find out.
I still think Zach Godley is only 85% owner.
Anderson's only 74%.
I'm tired of people dismissing Zach Godley as less than what he is. Just look at the numbers, first of all. That should tell you something right there. And then when you factor in the fact he's top 10 in ground ball rate, top 10 in swinging strike rate, all Zach Godley, if a pitcher's avoiding home runs and missing bats like that, all he can do to bring himself down is walk batters, and that's not really a problem for Godley. I think he's an ace, and I think he needs to be owned everywhere, and you can probably get him for less than he's worth in a trade.
Yep. I picked him up last week in a 14-team league.
Unbelievable.
With RP eligibility, mind you.
In a keeper league yesterday, I just traded Jonathan Lucroy and who was the other guy I traded? I just traded Jonathan Lucroy and Mitch Haniger for Zach Godley because I think Zach Godley is a better long-term option than either of those individually or both combined.
Hmm, interesting. Is Lucroy a free agent or is he going to be with the Rockies next year? Oh, he is? Okay. Okay, never mind. Hey, let's get our Michael Jackson on. All right, I got a few categories for you here. Oh, wait. One more trade deadline thing. Would you try to buy low on Mike Fiers, thinking that people just, you know, think he's done now? Two bad starts in a row?
I'm afraid he's gone the way of Marco Estrada. I think they're very similar, that they can be dominant when they are spotting their pitches perfectly, but it's hard to sustain that over a...
Their margin for error is so slim.
Right. That 88-mile-per-hour fastball.
Yeah. Like, you can't miss. Mm-hmm. Like, this is... If you have overpowering stuff, you can miss your spot by 6 inches. If you have Mike Fiers stuff, you can't miss.
Want to be starting something? I'm going to give you some players who are heating up right now. Is it the start of something? Or is it, you know, just a little hot streak? Albert Pujols, 6-for-9 in his last two games with 3 home runs and 9 RBIs. 73% owned. Albert Pujols, starting something?
No, I mean, he's like not even a top 30 first baseman in either format this season. And that's with 68 RBI.
He's so overowned. 70%. Yeah,
his home run pace has been decent all year, but he has a sub 700 OPS.
Yeah, at this point, given how easy it is to find home runs, 17 homers on August 2nd is nothing special.
No.
That's replaceable. There are second basemen who can give you that.
Yeah, and Pujols doesn't walk anymore. So
the 68 RBI are what he gives you, but like when you're talking about you need thousands of RBI to win a category, I don't think he helps you that much.
Rougned Odor, the number 13 second baseman in both points and Roto. Rougned Odor has 7 home runs in his last 9 games.
Yeah, baby.
Is this the start of something that's really been going on for about a month now?
I think things are evening out.
Yeah, they might be.
He hit .266 in the month of July, which is higher than his season-long on-base percentage.
13 walks, 16 walks, 102 strikeouts for Odor this year.
But I mean, I would actually like to see some hits that aren't home runs. And he does have 6 during this same stretch that he has 7 home runs. He has 6 non-home runs. So,
and he's pretty good.
You know, if you replaced all the home runs with outs, that wouldn't be a very good batting average, but I don't know that that's the fair way to look at it either. He's been really hot, Rougned Odor, and I think it was inevitable that he was going to turn his season around to be a must-start second baseman again.
Alex Bregman, since July 1st, Bregman has a .1033 OPS. He's batting .324 with 4 home runs, 11 walks, 12 strikeouts, and 11 doubles in 24 games. Is this the start of something for Alex Bregman?
Yes, I think so. And his production hasn't been just home runs. Isn't it funny how, like, in 2017, home runs have become so ubiquitous that... Like, it's almost like somebody applied a cheat code and it doesn't really count as a hit. Like, the only reason they got a hit out of it is because they hit it where nobody could catch it.
Well, and it's also, like, for me, I look at it and unless you're, like, truly, like, everybody hits a baseline at home runs at this point. Like, there are very few players who can't hit 15 home runs at this point.
Yeah.
So, the replacement level has gotten so high at home run that you start looking at the other things. And Alex Bregman does a lot of the other things well right now.
And has the profile to continue to do them well.
Bregman or Ahmed Rosario rest of season?
Bregman.
I would rather have Rosario.
Bregman or another guy who's in the wannabe starting something category, Eduardo Nunez. He is 11-for-22 with 2 homers, 2 steals, 4 doubles in 5 games with Boston. Whoa! And he has 20 steals in 81 games, so he is now on a 40-steal pace. Bregman or Nunez?
Bregman.
Bregman, okay. Yeah. Manny Machado is batting .343, but with a 100 ISO since the All-Star break. He's got 7 doubles, that's good. But no homers since the All-Star break. .343 batting average, that's Machado. Josh Donaldson is 8-for-22 with 3 home runs and 7 strikeouts, unfortunately, in his last 6 games, and the K's have been a problem for Donaldson. Are Machado or Donaldson starting something?
I think Donaldson is, and Chris has brought Donaldson up as an example of a player who has underperformed, and, you know, based on the peripherals, it may be legitimate, the underperformance, but I just am not, I wasn't ready to go there that soon for a player who had been MVP caliber for, what, 4 straight seasons, especially the last 2. And I'm glad I did it because it seems like he's heating up now.
Yeah, I'm not saying Josh Donaldson's through. I just think he's a diminished version of Josh Donaldson. But I think both will be better than they have been so far.
He and Machado. And finally, Carlos Santana, 5 home runs in his last 9 games. Red hot. What are you laughing at?
Another guy, wait a second. Will be better than he has been so far because the peripherals are like he just had a fluky low home run total in the first half.
You do understand, Scott, that as we argued about Carlos Santana, I always agreed that the best was yet to come and that we were going to see better production from Santana. That was never the argument.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
You could check the tape. I remember saying it.
No. I believe you. I believe you. And, I just think if that was the worst Carlos Santana could be, what we saw the first 3.5 months, and he was still a top 20 first baseman in points leagues in this first base landscape, he's still a really good player. And I'm sure all the Carlos Santana owners are patting themselves on the back right now.
Yeah, but like he's helping me out in my Roto League right now. You know, I always expect the walk to strikeout ratio to be great, but killing it.
It's like he's the most difficult player to, you know, assign value to across formats. Probably the singular most difficult player. Starlin Castro's up there too, because you know he's slanted more toward Roto than points. But the discussion about Santana always centered around points leagues to me. Right now, he's helpful in both. Yes.
When he's going good, and Santana is a slow starter and a second-half guy, he's absolutely going to help you out in categories leagues, no question. All right, so that's good. All right, next category, that was want to be starting something. Next category is asking him to change his ways. I'm looking at Carlos Martinez, and I'm asking him to change his ways because Carlos Martinez has a 5.40 ERA with 16 walks to 30 strikeouts over his last 6 starts, 9% swinging strike rate. Giving up a lot of fly balls and home runs this season compared to years past. I'm asking Carlos Martinez to change his ways.
And no message could have been any clearer.
Ooh, yeah. This guy is a gospel singer.
I would like him to change his ways too. And it's interesting you point out the fly ball thing because, yeah, ground balls had always been a big part of his profile. Home run prevention is an important thing. There had also been some walk issues recently. He had, I think, 5 in this start.
He's always had below average control.
Yeah, it's been
1 week.
You know, 6 starts. Last 6 starts were all kind of shaky. But yeah. He's been having an issue in the first inning that the Cardinals are looking into for the year. He has a 6.55 ERA in the first inning. I don't think it's that big of a deal. I just think it's a rough patch for a pitcher who's going to struggle with control at times and who's still finding his way.
I will point out, last year, Carlos Martinez overperformed his peripherals by a little bit. He had a 3.04 ERA and a 3.61 FIP. He's got a 3.59 ERA right now.
If you are good at preventing home runs, does that mean you would overperform your FIP?
Well, the thing with Carlos Martinez is he's never really shown an ability to prevent home runs at a better pace than a typical pitcher.
But his
home run to fly ball rate in 2015 and 2016 was right around 10 to 11%. That's pretty much perfectly average.
But just help me understand FIP. Would that factor in?
Sure. If, like, Robbie Ray or Michael Pineda, guys who tend to give up more hits in general and more home runs relative to their fly ball rate than your typical pitcher, yes, they will underperform their okay. fit.
All right, so here are the four guys that I'm looking at in the mirror, and I'm at, well, not in the mirror. Well, I'm looking at them at an angle in the mirror, so I am seeing them.
Wait. Hang on a second. Is that right about FIP? Because FIP is just measuring strikeouts per nine, walks per nine, home runs per nine, right? It's not taking into account fly ball rate.
Right, but you would expect most pitchers, the general understanding or assumption for a lot of these, especially like XFIP and Sierra, is that most pitchers are going to give up home runs at roughly the same rate relative to their fly ball rate. And so if you overperform your home run to fly ball rate expectation, you'll have a better FIP.
But FIP isn't even taking into
account. No, it's taking into account just home run rate, but your home run rate would be higher or lower if you have a specific skill in that regard.
A particular set of skills. All right, so here are the four players that I'm asking to change their ways. Carlos Martinez, Jose Berríos, who only had 6 swinging strikes yesterday at the Padres and has a 7% swinging strike rate, which is blah, in his last 5 starts. Jameson Taillon, terrible. And Xander Bogaerts, last 28 games, Xander Bogaerts batting 170 with a 459 OPS. He's a little banged up. Who is going to change their ways? Carlos Martinez, you guys say will. Berríos, Taillon, Bogaerts, will they change their ways?
The one who I have the most concern about, you have to have the most concern about Taillon just because the last 2 starts have been so ugly.
He's allowed 40% of his season runs in the last 2 starts.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know, he's a difficult pitcher to figure out because I want him to strike out more hitters than he does, but at the same time, the BABIP was kind of high even before this stretch.
368 now.
Yeah, I think it's a reminder that Taillon is still kind of fringy in mixed leagues, and that's fine. I mean, you're going to, you know, you're going to want to play matchups with him. You're not going to want to start him every single week. So that's really my takeaway from that. I do worry about Berríos some, you know, the lack of dominance we've seen from him lately. But, you know, looking through the game log to see if it's maybe like one particular pitch that he's started throwing more or less than he was before, or maybe that pitch has lost some effectiveness, and nothing really stood out along those lines. So I take from it that either he's a rookie who's just kind of wearing down in August, or it's nothing.
The one thing I do look at with both Taillon and Berríos is, you know, the scouting report on both of these guys coming out was that, you know, they don't necessarily have ace level stuff. And
Taillon,
I think that
Taillon and Berríos, you said?
Yeah.
Berríos doesn't have ace level stuff?
I mean, that was the scouting report.
Really?
And
that's interesting.
I don't think that was a universally believed scouting report, shared scouting report.
But compared to, like, you look at, like, Lucas Giolito and Jim and,
he doesn't throw 98.
Right. And he was a guy who there were some concerns, maybe not everyone, but some people had concerns, and Taillon actually does throw hard. He throws harder than Berríos. But looking at both of them, you know, neither one of them gets a ton of swinging strikes, and that's not necessarily a death knell, but you have to be really good at getting called strikes and avoiding hard contact. And, you know, it potentially lowers your ceiling.
All right, and finally, Beat It! Are you willing to drop any of these three guys? Dylan Bundy coming off a really good start, Ian Happ coming off a home run, and Alex Claudio coming off another non-save appearance.
I was willing to drop Dylan Bundy before this. One start's not going to change my mind. But I guess if you hadn't dropped him before this, it would be kind of weird to do it after he had a good start.
Yeah, but that's the thing. He's overowned. I understand if you have Bundy because he's your relief pitcher, but he's 85% owned. He had a 5.93 ERA in June. He had an 8.41 ERA in July. His peripherals stink. I don't know why he's 85% owned. Ian Happ, just doesn't play regularly now. He's been a little streaky, so maybe he'll come out of this funk. But before this home run, 222 with one home run since the All-Star break.
It's been really surprising how much, even when things were going well, he struck out in the majors, because that wasn't a big concern for him coming up. And he's got a 29% strikeout rate.
Would you beat it or no? Would you drop him?
Sure.
Yep. Beat it.
And Claudio?
Yeah.
Like, who would you guess gets the Rangers' next save opportunity?
I had no idea.
I think eventually it'll be Keone Kella.
He pitched
but
the
I
seventh.
Don't know that he's ready. Like, there's been no evidence that he's going to get that next chance.
Yeah, I have no idea.
In leagues where everyone who gets saves is owned, I think Claudio still needs to be among them. Now, there are a lot of highly available closers that I'd prioritize over him, like Blake Treinen, probably Aroldis Vizcaíno, who we haven't actually seen get a save in place of Jim Johnson yet, but he's the obvious guy in Atlanta. Shane Green, we saw him get his first save. I'd rather have him than Claudio.
All right, guys, there is a lot from yesterday that we're not going to be able to get to, unfortunately, including Joey Gallo's double dong day, John Lester and Carlos Carrasco struggling. I'm pretty much done with CC Sabathia.
You just had to get me started on Anthony Rizzo, didn't you?
Yeah, and Manny Machado, apparently. But let's finish off with today's matchups and some grade the trade. All right, Jordan Zimmermann at Tanaka.
I'm definitely starting Tanaka.
Jay Happ and Derek Holland. Would you start Happ?
I'm okay with starting Happ.
Yeah, I am too.
Would you start Irvin Santana and or Luis Perdomo?
Santana, but not Perdomo.
Yep.
Robert Stevenson, Trevor Williams.
Neither.
Yeah.
Jason Vargas, Jeremy Hellickson, Kansas City at Baltimore. Vargas at Hellickson.
Well, I'll go Vargas. I'll go Vargas. I know Chris is...
He's perfectly fine, but don't be surprised if he gets absolutely shelled by the Orioles.
Trevor Bauer at Rick Porcello.
I'd prefer to start neither.
Yeah, I mean, Porcello, I think, is really difficult to start in any categories-based format now because he just gives up so many hits, and it's been consistent all year. The whip's going to be high even when he pitches well.
How about Vance Worley hosting A.J. Cole, Nationals at Marlins, Cole and Worley?
I don't want either.
Yeah.
Brock Stewart at Julio Teheran.
I don't think I want to start either. I mean, Stewart probably goes without saying, but
yeah.
Teheran against the Dodgers after he just got shelled by in his last start. I forget who was against the...
Yeah, Tehran's just the matchups guy right now, and the Dodgers are one of the worst matchups you can have.
Zach Godley and Jake Arrieta.
Well, we know.
Yeah. Zach Godley.
Scott is definitely starting Zach Godley.
I think you're starting both. Yeah. Ariel Miranda, Andrew Cashner.
I will start neither.
Neither.
Luke Weaver and Brent Suter.
I'm going to say neither. I know Suter's been pretty good, but don't totally trust him.
I wish Luke Weaver was a closer. Luke Weaver, I believe you can get me through the nine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got Austin Pruitt for the Rays, Dallas Keuchel for the Astros.
More like Austin Blewett, Dallas Keuchel for sure.
Yeah. And we're not going to start Flexen or Chatwood in Coors. We're not going to start Jake Thompson or Jose Ramirez, are we?
Awful night for starting pitching.
And we're not going to start Daniel Gossett. Are we going to start Matt Moore at our home against the A's?
If you are absolutely desperate, that is one of the best matchups Matt Moore is ever going to have. But he's bad.
Mm-hmm.
Then let's read some emails and grade some trades. Jack from Los Angeles. Give up Jimmy James Nelson. Get Verlander and Lewis Brinson.
I still have Verlander ranked a little bit ahead of Jimmy Nelson, so I guess I have to give this a B-.
This is making me want to move Nelson ahead of Verlander. I think Brinson's a complete throw, and we're taking him out of the equation. It's Verlander versus Nelson here. I know I have Verlander ranked ahead. I know he's been better lately. I just have no real concerns over Jimmy Nelson.
I think it's a toss-up. Like I think that's pretty much a coin flip.
Okay, we'll give it a C.
Okay, then. And also, Adam, you mentioned you like sprinkles on ice cream, but are they rainbow or chocolate? And are sprinkles better on ice cream or on donuts? They are clearly rainbow. I actually don't really like chocolate sprinkles. And I would say sprinkles are better on ice cream, slightly ahead of donuts. That is an excellent question.
I agree with both of those takes.
Thank you. From Kenwall, trade Matt Carpenter, get Dallas Keuchel, points league.
Love it. I'll give it a... A minus, B plus.
All right, C plus for Chris. Brian in New Jersey, give up Devers and Hamels in a roto league. Devers and Hamels, get Alex Wood.
Yeah, if it's non-keeper, I think this is great.
I think that's a B plus.
Yep.
Nice. From Peter, roto league, 10 teams. Should I drop Carlos Gonzalez and add Derek Fisher?
In 10 team, maybe.
Yeah.
Just because you're probably not going to miss Carlos Gonzalez. I still think there's a chance he goes on a tear, but I'm not expecting it.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I'm willing to rank Fisher ahead of Cargo. So I would do that.
From Matt, 10 team categories league, give Ryan Zimmerman or Miguel Sano. Who do you guys like better?
Zimmerman.
I'd rather in categories, I guess I'd rather give up Sano.
All right, so give up Sano, get Salvador Perez. I have Votto at first. I need a catcher. Give up Sano, get Perez.
It sounded like you said Snow there as opposed to Sano.
Informer. Is that what you meant? B plus.
You know you're going to get Salvador Perez. I'll give you B plus. This is from Bill in California. Conforto or Cordy Dickerson?
Conforto.
Dickerson.
Ooh.
Ah, sorry.
Phil from Chicago. 10-team Dynasty Points League. Give up Jake Lamb. Get Elvis Andrews.
I think that's perfectly fine. I think that is a C.
Does the Dynasty change things at all? Like, do we expect Elvis Andrews to be this again next year?
This might be a dumb question, but is Elvis Andrews older than Jake Lamb?
I think a little, but I think he's like 27.
Okay, Elvis Andrews is almost 29, and Jake Lamb's almost 27. So the gap is not as big as I think most people would think, because Elvis Andrews has been around forever.
Wrap it up. Wrap it up. Give me a trade. Give me a grade. Give up Lamb, get Andrews.
I'll give it a C.
I said C.
And Auburn, grade the trade. Give up. Ready? Yu Darvish, Ryan Braun, and Sean Manaea. Darvish, Braun, and Manaea. Get Carlos Carrasco, Marcus Stroman, and Alex Bregman. It's a dynasty league. Give up Darvish, Braun, Manaea. Get Carrasco, Stroman, Bregman.
In a dynasty league, it's probably a B. In yearly, it's probably a C.
Yeah, I would agree with that. In yearly, I might actually prefer the Darvish, Braun, Manaea side. But when you add the fact that in a dynasty league you're swapping out Braun for Stroman, I think that clearly puts it over the top there. So in a dynasty league, I'd take it. I'll give it a B.
Back tomorrow with some buy or sell. See ya.